Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, July 6th, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the weekend special, Meet Illinois One's Building Fixer Upper. It's by Jennifer Bailey. Milford, saving downtown buildings from the wrecking ball off Illinois One in Milford and along the well-traveled route in Rossville is turning out to be Colleen Caldwell's superpower. Starting when she was a child, Caldwell had a fascination with old houses and buildings from watching This Old House. It made me think I could do anything, she said. In his off-season, her farmer father would work on construction projects and build furniture. She built her first bed at age 20. Caldwell cares about saving old downtown buildings near where she grew up in rural Wellington. Buying one led to owning six in Milford and four in Rossville, where she now lives and is building a new home in the country. I keep everything along Route 1, Caldwell said with a laugh. All of her buildings have been renovated, except the last one in Rossville. That project will come in a few months when she finishes construction on her new home. Caldwell beams with pride in the history preserved and what she and family members have accomplished, and rightly so. She's just one of the small town folks looking after their hometowns along Illinois One, wanting to make a difference and see it thrive with businesses and events for generations to come. Meant to be. When Caldwell got married, she found a fixer-upper to renovate. Then she also built a home out of a barn east of Wellington, where the kids could roller skate, skateboard, and swing in the big open space. When the kids got older, they left for Milford to be closer to school. They moved into the first downtown building she bought. That was in 2007. After her purchase of an 1897 building off Illinois One on East Jones Street in Milford. It originally would have been a grocery store, Caldwell said about Grab It Here, a huge grocery store. The upstairs was built for the Masons. There's peepholes in the doors where you have to say passwords to get in, and everything was secretive. That's cool, she said. I just love the history. I like the character of the old buildings that we just don't have nowadays. When she acquired the building, it was being used for remote-controlled cars, and there were mounds of dirt inside for driving around. Luckily, the dirt was removed prior to her taking it over. Caldwell was going to make the building entirely her home, but office space was requested when another building collapsed across the street. That building is now fully being used for Caldwell's wedding and event venue, Town and Country Events, with smaller and larger venue spaces, rooms for the bride and groom, a bar area, and the upstairs residential space, featuring a kitchen and bedrooms for rent. When Caldwell was redoing the space, she found a yardstick with the words Town and Country in a pile of rubble. She'd already picked that name for her business, which coincidentally would be housed in the same building where the Town and Country Lumberyard once operated. It was meant to be, she said. Toast of the town. Caldwell was just getting started in rehabbing Milford structures. She now owns six. So I've saved all the ones I can, and the rest of them are owned by people who are keeping them up. So I think the town is safe for a little while, she said. But it doesn't take very long. 10 years and your roof could go. Caldwell's buildings are all along Jones Street. They are being used as a coffee shop with an upstairs apartment, a dog groomer, a hair salon, and Angel's Closet, which gives away clothes, shoes, sheets, towels, and blankets to anyone in need. It took 7 years for the previous owner to sell Caldwell her first building, which came with a lot of fixing up to do. I always pictured the layout could be a venue, she said, about hosting events. If you have businesses in town, you have to figure out what will work for a small town. Just not everything works. The event center opened in 2018 after about 11 months of renovations. Her selling point to community members, why travel an hour to Champaign or Kankakee when you can have your weddings, proms, and events here? But now we have people drive an hour to us, and we just think that's so funny that people come from the big cities to us, Caldwell said. It's just wonderful. It exceeded our expectations. And the people you get to meet, I mean, you don't get bored because you've always got a new group of people. Rescuing Rossville. Renovations are challenging, Caldwell said, because you have to go backward before you go forward. Tearing down layers previous owners kept adding and addressing other issues. But she loves it because of all the character in the buildings she owns, especially the brickwork. I find the buildings that no one else will tackle, Caldwell said. That leaves me with a lot of things we can't use. In Rossville, she owns four buildings right along Illinois 1, across from Casey's. She started saving structures where while dating someone from the Vermilion County Village. All but one of the four have been fixed up and are being used by another event space, BAES, which opened about a year ago and is named after Caldwell's daughter, Bailey Estes. A golf simulator, a hair salon, and the hometown homespun gift shop. Renovations have become a family affair, with Bailey repurposing the old township building in Wellington and one of Caldwell's sons turning an old bank building into his home. We just like old things, Caldwell said. Danville's Old Town Preservation Association has honored Caldwell and others for their historic restoration work in the area. To be able to drive down the road and not see falling apart buildings, that's what really motivates me, she said. Because you always believe that the look of the town is how the town feels. And continuing inside the front page, we have Top of the Morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossow. On Tuesday, Jean Buchholz turns 90. Stop by and wish her happy birthday at the Loose Cobra in Tolono, where she bartends three times a week. 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. Good luck finding someone who has poured more beers over the years in these parts. I gotta keep moving or I'll sit around and fade away, she said. Bartending for the last 60 years, Jean stayed on when Matt Talbot bought the Dead Horse Lounge and rebranded it about a decade ago. He's a great boss, Jean said. Right back at you. She's beloved. She's an institution, Talbot said. Really sweet, super reliable, and works hard. Jean raised four kids after her husband, Leonard, was killed in a traffic accident. They all still live in the area. She has eight grandchildren and five great-grandchildren. Today at a Tolono Park, she'll have a ton of hugs to hand out at a family reunion. Her many regulars enjoy hearing family stories over a cold one. Likewise, she enjoys listening as much as serving. It keeps the spunky Tolono native young. Bartender of the Week, each Friday in the News Gazette, more like Bartender of the Century. I love my job and my customers are always nice to me, Jean said, adding she has no plans to retire anytime soon. It makes me feel great. And in history, area history, in 1925, James Mumford, son of Dean Herbert Mumford of the University of Illinois College of Agriculture, and a senior student in that department, was drowned near Nephi, Utah, presumably by a mountain flood resulting from a cloudburst. The exact manner in which the young man met death will never be known, as he was alone at the time. In 1975, 3 weeks of hearings on a limited work authorization for the proposed $1.2 billion Clinton nuclear power plant ended. If granted, the limited authorization would allow only for site preparation and auxiliary developments. Hearings will be held this fall on the safety aspects of the plan. In 2010, Champaign County's judicial system is doing away with its grand jury system in an attempt to save a few more dollars each year. Cuts have included whole positions in some departments, reducing the number of hours some employees work, reducing the number of weeks a year juries hear cases, releasing city ordinance violators from the jail early, and even putting energy-saving light switches in the courthouse bathrooms. In international history, today's highlight, on July 5th, 1996, Dolly the sheep, the first mammal cloned from an adult somatic cell by scientists at the Roslin Institute at the University of Edinburgh, was born. On this date, in 1687, Isaac Newton first published his Principia Mathematica, a three-volume work setting out his mathematical principles of natural philosophy. And continuing with our community news regarding REO Speedwagon, Luttrell out of hospital, recovering in Tennessee. This is by Dave Hinton. Former REO Speedwagon vocalist Terry Luttrell was playing the role of father and grandfather back in Tennessee on Thursday, a day after having been released from Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana, where he had been recovering from injuries sustained in a June 15th car rollover. Luttrell sounded like his old self in a phone interview and said he has started thinking ahead about future dates for his REO Classics band. He doesn't have to be in a hurry. The band's next concert is about a month away. Dates are scheduled in Chicago and Anderson, Indiana. Meanwhile, the rest of the band is looking forward to taking their vacations, Luttrell said. The group has one album on CD and vinyl, and Luttrell said a new double album could be in the works. While getting around with a cane and receiving help from his daughter, Kristen, Luttrell said he gets plenty of entertainment from watching the show his 7-year-old granddaughter Willow puts on in the family living room. She's a gymnast and dancer and plays softball and has piano recitals, Luttrell said. She's working on being a singer, her and my daughter both. Luttrell said Kristen and her husband, Dylan, are starting to come back to their musical roots. They had a band in Champaign, Dry Creek Station, before moving to Tennessee. I miss Champaign, Luttrell said. It's my hometown. When I was back there, I certainly could feel the love. There was a lot of love in that arena that night, he said, referring to REO's final concert June 14th at the State Farm Center. We made musical history. It was a good final touch. Luttrell said REO should have done a farewell tour, but noted it was lead singer Kevin Cronin's choice not to. He should have let Bruce Hall back in the band. Among those who thought the farewell concert was a fabulous night, Luttrell said, were 11 nurses at Carl, some of whom tended to him after his car wreck off Interstate 57 near the Arcola exit. The 78-year-old Luttrell said he realized he was too sleepy to drive and was planning to get off at the Arcola exit, but didn't make it and fell asleep. Luttrell was in the hospital for 19 days, receiving physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy. His daughter said he experienced a brain bleed as well as bruising to his heart caused by a sternum fracture, as well as fractures to his neck and lower back. Luttrell said the pain is going down, and about the only thing bothering him now is his back from flopping around inside the car. If I would have had a 5-point racing harness on, I would have unstrapped it and walked out. Doctors have indicated he will make a full recovery. And in Champaign violence, coroner IDs Urbana man killed in early morning shooting. This is by Luke Taylor. A 32-year-old Urbana man is dead after a shooting early this morning, Champaign police say. Champaign County coroner Lori Brower said Martez Jones of Urbana was pronounced dead at 2:10 a.m. Friday at Carl Foundation Hospital. Officers were dispatched to the 1900 block of West Bradley Avenue after multiple reports of a shooting with injuries at around 12:36 a.m. While officers were searching the area for evidence of gunfire, Mr. Jones arrived at Carl. He was in critical condition and was immediately taken to surgery, but succumbed to his injuries. Investigators say Mr. Jones was outside of a business when multiple shots were fired. One or more individuals who were responsible for the gunfire fled the area. Damage was also reported to several vehicles. Police are continuing to search the area for witnesses and video footage that may help their investigation. And Royal Donut, Danville favorite, setting up shop in Champaign. This is by Jeff D'Alessio. A Danville donut destination is expanding to Champaign. Royal Donut announced Friday morning that it will open a second store at 1105 Windsor Road, now vacant after Pandemonium Donuts' recent closure. They were a well-loved brand in Champaign, and they decided it was time to close that chapter to try something different, the company said. They reached out to us with the opportunity to take over their lease, and we thought it was a perfect chance to continue having delicious donuts in that space and bring Royal Donut to Champaign. Our donuts are not a direct replacement of their delicious and unique creations, but we hope to be a welcome addition to Champaign-Urbana. It will be Royal Donut's first store outside of Danville. The company was founded in 1972. Royal Donut has not set an opening date, but said it is shooting for sometime in the fall. In addition to donuts, it will serve Mad Goat Coffee, a sister company of Royal Donuts, since 2022. The CU community has been so welcoming to the Mad Goat Coffee location in downtown Champaign, and we look forward to adding Royal Donut to the mix, the company said. Royal Donut will serve Mad Goat Coffee daily, including their amazing cold brew. Mad Goat Coffee downtown will have a variety of Royal Donuts available daily. And from the Champaign County Court, protesters sentence 100 hours of public service. This is by Luke Taylor. The sentencing hearing for a pro-Palestinian demonstrator convicted of resisting or obstructing a peace officer took less than 10 minutes Thursday morning. No argument was required, as both sides agreed on the minimum possible sentence for Yapa Issa, 19, of Savoy. While multiple other individuals who faced charges after the April 26, 2024 protest at the University of Illinois have taken plea deals, Issa was the first to go to trial. Ultimately, Champaign County Judge Roger Weber made a similar ruling to the negotiated pleas others have accepted. He dismissed a felony mob action charge and convicted her of resisting or obstructing a peace officer. At the agreement of Assistant State's Attorney Eileen Keeley and Issa's attorney Evan Bruno, Issa will be required to complete 100 hours of public service work and 12 months of conditional discharge. That is also the sentence that other individuals have accepted as part of their negotiated pleas. Issa was accused of playing a role attempting to bar police from making way for U of I facilities and service employees to remove tents and other temporary structures placed by demonstrators near the alma mater statue. Like protesters at many universities nationwide, the demonstrators intended to erect an encampment in a show of solidarity with people in Gaza. The intent of the demonstration was to demand the university retract support from companies and academic institutions involved with the nation of Israel and its military. University officials asked the protesters to remove the tents, saying the demonstration could continue, but that structures were against campus policies. Facilities and services staff did remove structures from a protest on the morning of April 24th, but a larger group of hundreds of demonstrators formed that afternoon. They also erected tents and similar structures, forming a circle around them and linking arms in an apparent attempt to block access after refusing to remove them. U of I police officers eventually formed a wedge to make way for staff to enter the group and remove the structures. A large sheet of plywood that was initially used as a sign with words painted on it became a topic of debate in court proceedings for Issa's case, as Bruno argued that holding a sign was a pure expression of free speech. In a hearing on whether the charges violated Issa's First Amendment rights, Weber said that a sign becomes a weapon if used to push or hit people. In police body camera footage played at Issa's trial, police and protesters could be seen pushing on opposite sides of the plywood sheet. Issa's conviction was tied in part to her brief involvement in pushing on the plywood, as well as linking arms with other administrators. Weber ruled that the evidence falls woefully short of linking her to any violent activity warranting the mob action charge, but he said that it was clear she had some role in attempting to block officers from accessing the tent. And from the Champaign City Council, street designation proposed in honor of late bar manager. This is by Jana Wiersema. A beloved bar manager who died after succumbing to injuries from a shooting could be the third individual to receive an honorary street designation in 2025. Aaron Hardway has submitted a request to designate North Chestnut Street between East University Avenue and East Main Street as Honorary Brandon Hardway Drive after her late husband. His death was a devastating loss, not only to those who knew him personally, but to the community he helped shape through his work and character, Aaron wrote in her application. Brandon died at the age of 45 on February 17, 2024, after being shot by Fidele G. Tishimanga on February 8. Brandon, who was the manager of Poor Brothers, told police that he had been standing outside the bar when a man asked him for a cigarette. When he declined, the man shot him in the back and ran away. Tishimanga, who has a history of mental illness, was found not guilty by reason of insanity and has been committed for up to 60 years. Aaron originally requested a designation along North Market Street, which would include the spot on the sidewalk where Brandon was shot, but city staff asked her to pick an alternate location, as the area is already designated as the Market Street Entertainment District. The proposed stretch of Chestnut Street is located just east of the bar. Naming a street after Brandon would create a lasting reminder of his positive influence on the local community, Aaron wrote in her application. His leadership helped turn Poor Brothers into more than just a business. It became a place where people gathered, built friendships, and supported one another, she said. Brandon had a natural ability to connect with people and make them feel at ease. Through his work and personal interactions, he fostered a sense of belonging and community that extended far beyond his workplace. The Champaign City Council will discuss the honorary street designation during a study session at Tuesday's meeting and decide in a poll whether to put it on the agenda for approval at a future meeting. Action items at Tuesday's council meeting include a collective bargaining agreement with AFSCME Local Union 1960 for fiscal years 25-26, 27-28, and a $240,000 grant award from the Federal Railroad Administration to fund a study of the Bradley Avenue Railroad crossing between North Market and North 4th Streets. The council approved honorary street designations for Patricia Avery Neal and Clarence Shelley earlier this year. City policy limits the number of designations to 4 per year, not counting those in honor of city employees who died in the line of duty, wrote project specialist Jamie Vermillion. And from the Urbana City Council, vote expected on community development hire. This also by Jana Wiersema. Urbana could be close to filling a position that has been vacant for a little over a year. The City Council is expected to vote Monday on Mayor Deshaun Williams' appointment of Olivia Chauvin to Director of Community Development Services for a term ending June 30, 2027. According to a staff report to the council, Jovine has a broad array of experience in both the private and public sector, including the design and development of housing programs, real estate market analytics, urban planning and zoning, and project and team management. She most recently served as the Economic Intelligence and Interagency Affairs Program Manager for the Washington, D.C. Deputy Mayor's Office for Planning and Economic Development, where she oversaw several multi-million dollar programs related to downtown housing, downtown real estate repurposing through tax incentives, and the execution of economic development programs, tax policies, and proposals, city staff added. Jovine's education includes a master's degree in urban planning from Columbia University and a bachelor's in urban and environmental studies from New York University. The city's previous community development director, Kimberly Smith, resigned in May of 2024. In addition to the special city council meeting Monday, a committee of the whole session also will be held. The agenda includes a special use permit request for a proposed hostel at 1204 South Lincoln Avenue and an ongoing discussion about a proposed ordinance that would create approval and reporting requirements for surveillance technology used by the city. Final action is not taken at committee meetings. And from Kathy's mailbag, the question is, why might it take up to 13 months to resurface 3 miles of U.S. 45? And why was the winning bid just shy of $14.5 million, about $2.7 million more than IDOT had planned on? Illinois Department of Transportation engineer Kenzel Garnett said two contractors submitted bids for the project, and contractor uncertainty related to material supply and overall inflationary pressures, coupled with the existing workload of contractors in the area, contributed to the higher overall bid price. In addition, the cost of electrical components, fabricated metal products continues to rise due to the current potential future impact on tariffs. Construction had the winning bid. As for the August 2026 completion date, Garnett said the Neal Street Dunlap Avenue project has an interim completion date of December 1, 2025. The items of work that need to be completed by that date include pavement patching, ADA ramp reconstruction, milling and resurfacing throughout the entire project limits, incidental hot mix asphalt resurfacing, and the placement of temporary pavement markings, he said. The pavement patching, milling, and resurfacing shall be completed by November 1, 2025. All other construction operations must be completed by August 1, 2026, plus 10 working days. The work will be paused during some of the busiest times in the U of I's academic and athletic calendars. No broken pavement, open holes, trenches, barricades, cones, or drums will remain on or adjacent to the traveled way, and all lanes shall be open to traffic during U of I's general move-in days in August, and will also apply during any home football games. We're going to take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for Sunday, July 6, 2025. Please stay tuned.